The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. I'm going to be finishing up Volume 63, Number 2, the Spring 2024 edition, It's Revolutionary, Choices in Conflict. Last time I read part of the From the Editor article, and now I'm going to read it in its entirety. What Do You Think? By Kathy East, the editor of the magazine. You might have heard the word centennial. That means a 100th anniversary or celebration of something. Or the word bicentennial, which means a 200th anniversary or celebration. But have you ever heard the word semi-quincentennial? Well, get ready, because you're going to. That's a big word to say, but it's easy if you just break it down and read it slowly. Semi-quincentennial. Might take a little practice. But now I can say it, and so can you. This word means the 250th anniversary of something or its celebration. And you'll find it in the name of the United States Semi-Quincentennial Commission. On July 4th, 2026, our nation will commemorate a very special moment in our history. The U.S. Semi-Quincentennial Commission was established by Congress and signed into law by former President Barack Obama to start planning the 250th anniversary of the founding of the United States, otherwise known as the 4th of July, our birthday. The commission is charged with orchestrating the largest and most inclusive anniversary observance in our nation's history. But it's not just about looking back and remembering the past. As Rosie Rios, chairman of the United States Semi-Quincentennial Commission, writes, America's 250th anniversary is about more than reflecting on our past. It's about honoring the contributions of individuals who built this country, the innovations that put this country on the map and a man on the moon, and imagining what the next 250 years might look like for our children and the generations to come. And that means you. You might wonder why we created two issues of Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine about the American Revolution for fall 2023 and spring 2024, when this big semi-quincentennial is still a ways off in the future. It's because we're so excited we couldn't wait. And we wanted to share all this cool history with you now so you'll be an expert by the time the semi-quincentennial gets here. And don't worry. They've also nicknamed the celebration America 250, which is a lot easier to say. But now we know the fancier historian's word for it, too. So let's go. We hope this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian, It's Revolutionary, Choices in Conflict, will help jumpstart your exploration of the American Revolution and North Carolina's special role in that story. And now on to the Fall 2024 edition, Volume 64, Number 1, Carolina Critters, Animals and People in North Carolina History. We start with the message from the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association Program Coordinator, Jessica Pratt. Hey, y'all. The work of museums is to collect, preserve, study, and exhibit objects, stuff, to assist people in understanding topics in history. Here at the North Carolina Museum of History, we collect artifacts and other materials related to the history and heritage of our state. One way we explain this to younger visitors is to say that we're the people's museum. The things we collect help us tell the stories of North Carolinians from the past and their connections to the present. You may be wondering why the student magazine of the People Museum is focusing on animals for this issue. It's because the work and lives of people and animals were and remain intertwined since before this place was called North Carolina. People relied on animals for food, clothing, transportation, companionship, and more for thousands of years. Butterbean and I believe that this issue will give you new insights into how the people and animals of our state make history together. And there's a photograph of the dog Butterbean with Jessica, and so the caption goes, Butterbean joined the Pratt family through its local rescue group in 2023, 1 week before the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association convention. Here's the introductory article. It's called Carolina Critters, Animals and People in North Carolina History. And it's written by Megan Davis, who is the coordinator of teacher education at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. She gets to take teachers on fun field trips to cool places across our state. And she gets to visit schools to help teachers learn how to use the natural world as their classrooms. My love of animals dates way back. Maybe yours does too. I can't be sure, but I think my earliest memories are of listening to the gentle, deep purring coming from the soft, furry bodies of my beloved family pets, two cats, named Beacons and Odie. Later, I got two rats, Sweet Tart and Coco, who came to live with me after my kindergarten classroom pets had babies, and I got to keep two of them. Then in middle school, I got two guinea pigs, Spot and Cokey. And in high school through college, I had a betta fish, Buddy. Even today, I have a chinchilla named Poppy. She just turned 16. Perhaps you have a cat or a dog yourself, or maybe a fish or a snake. Or maybe you've cared for a caterpillar for a few weeks at school. Or even just watched the birds outside your window. Our appreciation for animals can take many forms. Animals are all around us, whether we realize it or not. They play important roles in our lives. They may be a friend or the dinner on your plate. They may be what makes us sick, parasites, or part of the cure. The week I'm writing this, a genetically modified pig kidney has just been transplanted into a living human. Think of pollination. Bees transferring pollen from one plant to another. This helps us grow about 80% of the foods we eat. Animals are also major economic drivers of our state. Think poultry, pigs, fish, oysters, and more. As of 2022, North Carolina ranks first in the United States in poultry and egg production, 16.2% of the total U.S. production. Second in producing turkeys, 13.9% of total U.S., and trout, 7.7% of total U.S., and third in production of hogs and pigs, 10.8% of total U.S. That's a lot of animals being raised here in North Carolina that will end up on plates across our nation and the world. Throughout history, animals have been by our sides, under our saddles, or even flying in rockets to orbit Earth. Did you know that Ham, the first chimpanzee in space in 1961, later came to live at our North Carolina Zoo after he retired from NASA and the National Zoo? I am someone who loved science from the beginning. It was animals that helped me remember important dates on my history tests. It was bites from fleas on rats that caused and spread the bubonic plague, which killed more than one-third of Europe in the mid-1300s. Before the 1500s, pre-colonial times, indigenous peoples in the United States, in North America, used the Three Sisters method of agriculture, growing corn, squash, and beans together. They sometimes also placed a dead fish under the soil as a means of adding fertilizer. In 1962, Rachel Carson published her important book, Silent Spring, after years of research on the grave impacts of pesticides like DDT on birds. Her book went on to spark a public outcry over chemical use and eventually led to the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency as we know it today. Sometimes, maybe most of the time, Animals behave in predictable ways that benefit humans, like when horses carried food or medicines to the troops during countless wars. But occasionally, animals act differently than we expect, or spread unpredictably in an environment, and this can cause major problems for humans. In this issue, we tried to highlight some of the many ways that animals have had an impact here in North Carolina. There were way too many creature stories to include them all, and so this is only a few. As you read, you might notice that we intentionally did not choose animals like the bald eagle or the elk. Often, in science or in the media, there's a bias toward what are known as charismatic megafauna. Mega meaning big, fauna meaning animals, are the large animals. And charismatic refers to the most well-liked ones, kind of like the popularity contest of the animal world. I bet you could name some charismatic megafauna right now. Can you name three of the most popular animals? Did you say lions, tigers, bears? Oh my. Elephants, sharks, the list goes on. In this issue, we wanted to make sure to include some of the underdogs, the less popular creatures, but still important. We hope you'll grow in your appreciation of who and what put North Carolina on the map, and that you feel inspired to dive deeper into learning about even more amazing animals in the history of our state. Here are the captions that accompany the photographs in this article. How do you feel when you look at this photo titled Junior and Pet, Sodom, 1978? What kind of relationship do you think the horse and the man have? Is Pet a working horse or a family pet or both? The image is copyright 2024 by Rob Amberg from Sodom Laurel Album, UNC Press and the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke, published in 2002. Learn more about Amberg's photography and his new book, Little Worlds, at robamberg.com/littleworlds. Horses help a man ford a rocky stream in the mountains of western North Carolina around 1900 to 1915. On January 31, 1961, a 4-year-old chimpanzee named Ham successfully completed a 16-minute, 39-second space flight and reached an altitude of 157 miles above Earth's surface. In 1980, he retired to spend the rest of his life at the North Carolina Zoo. Rachel Gagliardi is a student at the NC State College of Veterinary Medicine and a rodeo queen. She got riding lessons as a gift for her 8th birthday and now owns 3 horses. Today, horses are at the center of both her hobby, competing in rodeos, and her research at State's Schnabel Equine Sports Medicine Laboratory. In 2023, she was named Miss Rodeo North Carolina. There are 2 sidebar articles accompanying this article, and the first one is, so, what exactly is an animal? Generally speaking, animals are organisms that, one, need to eat. They can't produce their own energy like plants doing photosynthesis. 2, move. Sometimes these are very small movements, like coral or sponges. Yes, they are animals. 3, have sexual reproduction. In order to produce offspring, animals usually must combine the genetic information from 2 individuals of different sexes. 4, are multicellular, made up of many cells. Note, animals are different from bacteria, which are unicellular, having only 1 cell. There are many millions of species of animals on Earth, and many thousands of new ones are described each year. It's important to remember that we, as humans, Homo sapiens, are just one of them. And accompanying this article is a photograph with a caption, some of the animals roaming these lands in the early 1700s. Illustration from the book, A New Voyage to Carolina, containing the exact description and natural history of that country, together with the present state thereof, and A Journal of 1,000 Miles, traveled through several nations of Indians, published in 1709 by John Lawson, born 1674, died 1711. The other article is How Do Museums Get Started? Do you have a prized collection of something at home? Maybe a rock collection or shells, or maybe you collect baseball or Pokemon cards. Did you know that more often than not, museums get their start as someone's personal collection? That was the case for our oldest museum here in North Carolina, the North Carolina State Museum, now known as the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. It began as 1879, when the collections of state geologist Washington Carruthers Carr, rocks, minerals, fossils, and different types of woods, and Commissioner of Agriculture Leonidas Lafayette Polk, agricultural products, were combined under one roof. Later in 1887, the General Assembly of North Carolina officially established the State Museum to illustrate the agricultural and other resources and the natural history of this state. Did you know that you can still visit some of the same specimens that were on display for families in the late 1800s? The collection of 12-inch diameter polished stones representing different rock types from across North Carolina is still in the gallery today on the second floor. That collection also traveled to represent North Carolina at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. So is Mayflower, a right whale whose skeleton was donated to the museum in 1876, long before there was even a building to house the bones. The skeleton hangs above your head as you enter the Coastal Carolina Hall on the first floor. Not long after these initial collections were greatly improved upon and added to by two industrious brothers, Herbert Hutchinson, H.H., and Clement Samuel, C.S. Brimley, from England. And there are photographs with this article, and the captions are, Museum Specimens at the Museum of North Carolina, Museum of Natural History, now the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, circa 1900. Herbert Hutchinson, H.H. Brimley, pictured here in 1936, served as director of the North Carolina Museum of Natural History from 1895 to 1946. The next article is Bones in the Coal Mine by Dr. Christian Kammerer. Dr. Christian Kammerer is research curator of paleontology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh. He is a specialist on prehistoric life of the late Paleozoic and early Mesozoic eras. Fossils provide windows into the life of the distant past, and North Carolina has an incredible fossil record stretching back more than 600 million years. A fossil is the preserved remains or impressions of plants and animals that lived a long time ago. When people think about notable fossils from our state, they often think big. Impressive megafauna, such as mastodons, giant sloths, or North Carolina state fossil, the megatooth shark, Otutus megalodon. However, one of the most important fossil finds in North Carolina history was also among the smallest, a creature called Dromatherium. Northwest of Sanford in what is now Lee County lie the remains of the Old Egypt coal mine. Beginning in the 1850s, the Egypt mine was one of the main sources of coal power for the state. Coal is a fossil fuel, meaning that it is made up of carbon from ancient organisms. Fossil fuels such as coal and oil are not made up of dinosaurs or other vertebrate or bony animals. They are the compressed remains of prehistoric plants, coal, or plankton, oil. But though they don't make up the coal itself, fossil bones can be found embedded in coal seams. The first fossils from the Egypt mine were studied by a scientist named Ebenezer Emmons, born 1799, died 1863. Originally working in New York, a scholarly dispute resulted in his being banned from the field of geology in that state, leading him to take a job as the first North Carolina state geologist in 1851. Geology is the science that studies the history of the earth, especially as recorded in rocks, and a geologist is a scientist who works in the field of geology. Emmons found all sorts of previously unknown fossils in the coal from the Egypt mine, including various crocodile-like reptiles and amphibians that allowed it to be recognized as Triassic in age, roughly 235 million years ago, the dawn of the age of dinosaurs. The most exciting of them all was a single tiny jawbone that he named Dromotherium sylvester, meaning running beast of the woods in ancient Greek. Dromotherium would have been around the size of a mouse, but it had sharp teeth and ate meat or insects like modern shrews, small mole-like mammals. Emmons believed it was the oldest mammal, and it retained that title for much of the 19th century. The jaw of Dromotherium does show several mammal-like features, including separation of the teeth into distinct types, equivalent to the incisors, canines, and molars of living mammals like us, and enlargement of the tooth-bearing bone, called the dentary, to the exclusion of other bones. Later research showed that it was not quite a mammal, instead being called now a synapsid proto-mammal. But it was still very close, providing important information on how mammals originated. Other paleontologists, who are scientists who study animal and plant fossils for information about life in the past, collected fossils from the Egypt mine in the years after Emmons' death, but a series of tunnel collapses and explosions resulting in the deaths of dozens of miners eventually forced its closure. Triassic fossils are still being found today in other rocks in central North Carolina. Some of these can be seen on display at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh, including other proto-mammal relatives of Dromotherium. However, so far, no one has ever found another specimen of Dromotherium. After nearly 170 years, it is still known only from a single bone. So if you ever see Triassic rocks in central North Carolina, keep an eye out. Maybe you could be the one to find more of this elusive and amazing animal. Here are the photographs accompanying this article and their captions. Ebenezer Emmons worked in the state geologist's office on the third floor of the state capitol in Raleigh. Today you can still view the office, which has been restored to its 1858 to 1859 appearance. Before the development of steam power or electricity, mules played various roles in the mining industry, as seen in this stereograph with the caption, "Man and beast toiling in perpetual night, hauling coal to the shaft." Mules could pull wagons of coal through small spaces. Sometimes they were even stabled underground when off-duty. Ebenezer Emmons, North Carolina's first state geologist, date unknown. Photograph of the holotype, first and in this case only specimen known, of Dromotherium sylvester, consisting of an isolated jawbone preserved in coal. Specimen is in the collections of the National Museum of Natural History, Smithsonian Institution, Washington, D.C. And an interpretive drawing of the jaw of Dromotherium in internal view, image modified from Figure 3 of Osborne from 1907. Next, a closer look, North Carolina's state animals. You may know North Carolina's state motto, Esse Quam Videri, from 1893, which means to be rather than to seem. Or you may have joined other Tar Heel Junior Historian Association club members in singing our state song, The Old North State, from 1927, at the start of the Tar Heel Junior Historian Association annual convention. But did you know that 14 of our 42 state symbols are animals? How are state symbols chosen? Any individual or group can propose an idea. Next, a state legislator introduces a bill in the North Carolina General Assembly for a vote. Once approved, the bill is signed by the governor and becomes a law. All of our state symbols share one important job: to remind North Carolinians and the rest of the world of our state's culture, natural wonders, and rich history. To learn more about our state animals, start here with 1 and 2. Then look for more of them throughout this issue. They're listed in order by the year that they were officially adopted. Number 1, the state bird, from 1943, the cardinal. The North Carolina Bird Club campaigned to choose a state bird through newspapers, bird clubs, and schools. More than 23,000 votes were cast, and the cardinal beat out the red-winged blackbird and the wild turkey, among others. Cardinals do not migrate or travel with the seasons, so you'll see them year-round. You can spot the male by the bright red color. The female's brown feathers help her blend in with her natural surroundings so she can protect her eggs from predators. Number 2, the state shell, 1963, the Scotch bonnet. The Scotch bonnet gets its name from its striking pattern, which resembles a traditional Scottish tartan. So it's not just a symbol of our state's national heritage and beautiful beaches. It's also a tribute to the early Scottish settlers of North Carolina. This shell houses a small sea snail and is mostly found along the Outer Banks, particularly after storms. Fun fact, North Carolina was the first state to adopt a state shell. Number 3 is the state mammal, from 1969, the gray squirrel. It's a good bet you've seen this busy state symbol wandering around your yard, school, or local parks. The industrious gray squirrel, Sciurus carolinensis, seems to be everywhere. In 1969, Representative Basil Barr surveyed school children to find out their favorite mammal, and they picked the gray squirrel. These small mammals are active during the day and are always busy searching for food like acorns and fruits. Fun fact, gray squirrels can be found throughout all 100 colonies of North Carolina. Number 4, the state saltwater fish, channel bass, from 1971. The channel bass, Slaenops ocellatus, also known as the red drum, can be found swimming along the Carolina coast between Oregon Inlet and Cape Lookout in groups called schools, like you. These feisty fish live a long time and can grow up to 95 pounds, but most average between 30 and 40 pounds. Channel bass are characterized by their reddish-bronze color and distinctive marking. Can you spot the spots on their tails, which some say look like eyes? We've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.